Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the June 7th, 2016. Please. We need order, please. If you have conversations, please take them outside. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the June 7th, 2016 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. If you have electronic devices, including members of the legislature, please put them on vibrate or otherwise silence them. If there's an emergency, we have two exits, besides the elevator, the exit in the back of the room to my right, the exit to the front of the room to my left. And if there's a fire, please don't use the elevator. Would you please stand with me while we say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The clerk will call the roll, please.
Mr. McKenna? Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
Bob Moore here than whatever that just was.
Mr. Dennis?
I'm here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
14 members present.
We have quorum. We're all here. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I'm not aware that we have an executive session tonight. John? Joe? Okay. Then we're going to go right to privilege of the floor for the public. If someone wants to speak to us, they have the opportunity to talk about any subject. If you want to do that, please fill out one of the blue cards in the back of the room and pass it up. You're allowed 3 minutes. We have a countdown clock, which will time you, at the end of which there will be an audible alarm, sounds like a telephone ring. And if you're still speaking at that point, please conclude. By coming to speak on privilege of the floor, you're agreeing to the 3-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. And you agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. The first card I have tonight is from Herbert Howland Bolton. Please step to the microphone and tell us your municipality, and you have 3 minutes.
Could I go last?
I'm sorry?
Could I go last? Would that be an issue?
You want to go last? Well, we only have two.
Could I go after? Second?
Sure. Are they on the same issue?
Thank you.
Bert Bland.
Thank you. I'm Bert Bland. I'm Associate Vice President for Energy and Sustainability within the Facilities Division at Cornell University. Here to speak in support of, I think, a resolution that's in front of you tonight, which is resolution of the Tompkins County Legislature urging the New York State Public Service Commission to allow customers to retain ownership of renewable energy certificates from NYSERDA-funded projects. Just a little background on that. It's important for Cornell and many constituents within Tompkins County, and including Tompkins County itself, that we promote renewable energy in its many forms, whether it be wind, solar, sustainable biomass, hydropower. The Federal Trade Commission actually regulates when you're allowed to claim and promote that you are using green power, producing green power. And New York State now is developing a system called NYGATS, that's the acronym, New York Generation Asset Tracking System, to actually track, to do an accounting of how renewable electric energy is produced and who's producing it and who's using it. And this is important. New York State now has declared that their goal by 2030 is that 50% of all electrical energy is renewable energy. So this has to be tracked in a very a new system called NYGATS, and it's like a very thorough accounting system. The issue that we're concerned about is that a surprise footnote in the NYGATS 90-some page publication claimed that because of NYSERDA's financial incentives of projects, in which Cornell takes advantage of our solar farm and others within the county too, NYSERDA will retain the rights to any certificates produced by the generating units installed under the incentive program. And that was a surprise to us, not what we'd led to believe. We don't believe that the contract actually says that between our developer and NYSERDA. So I would just, I think the important part of this two-page resolution, I'll just read it, resolves that the Thomas County Legislature urges the PSC and NYSERDA to work with counties, local municipalities, and other impacted entities to develop a solution that will promote rather than undermine continued broad-based green investments and allow strong partnership among the state, municipalities, businesses, and institutional leaders, together with investor-owned utilities, in meeting our respective renewable energy goals. Thank you.
Thank you, Bert. This is the last blue card I have. If there's anyone else, please hand it up. Mr. Holland Bolton.
All right. My name is Herbert Holland Bolton. I'm here to talk about the Ithaca plan. So basically,
point that microphone up a little bit toward you.
All right. Okay. All right. It's good.
Yeah. That's better.
All right. So I was curious. I mean, how easy would it be to already use the facilities at the behavioral health unit and, at the hospital to function as a detox? I mean, I think it's very important that Ithaca have a detox, but it is capable to go to a detox in another county, and a safe injection site is not, you know, you can't go to one of those anywhere in America, so I think it is incredibly important to focus on that because it is something that, you know, it would be groundbreaking. I've lost enough friends to incredibly preventable, incredibly preventable deaths, and and I'm kind of tired of it. Let's see. Also, as far as like drug tourism goes, or the idea that somebody would come here to use our facilities. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to saving a life from Tioga, if they're not, from Tompkins County. I don't really see the difference. But I think it's awesome that you guys are even considering this. And so I'd just like to thank everybody here very much. This is something that I think should have been considered in many places a long time ago. And we've had more than enough information to know that this is at least an avenue to check out and go down. So thank you very much, guys.
Thank you for coming and speaking to us. We will now proceed to privilege of the floor for elected officials. We have the supervisor of the town of Ulysses with us, Elizabeth Thomas. Help her with
short
that
person.
Microphone.
There we go. Okay. Thank you for this time. I appreciate it. Oh, glasses here. And I'll be back to give you better updates from the town of Ulysses. But for my time today, I just want to talk about my concern over, or our concern over, a property in foreclosure that's now owned by the town. It's in a designated unique natural area, and on the maps that are coming around, you'll see the parcel. It's in yellow on the colored side. On the other side of the paper are all the unique natural areas, or UNAs, that are in the town of Ulysses. It's parcel 27-4-6. It's at 1284 Teganic Boulevard. It's in Unique Natural Area 62. It's 4.1 acres, and the parcel is between Route 89 and the Black Diamond Trail, which will be open, we think, this fall. It's in our zoning area that's zoned for conservation, which basically limits the subdivision of that area. And it's been foreclosed for, I think, quite a few years, so it hasn't been generating any taxes for a long time. So Unique Natural Area 62, you'll see it that it was designated by the county's own Environmental Management Council. The county designates that, and then in, I think, 2010, the town of Ulysses accepted that designation by resolution, so we formally acknowledge that. So the big question for us is, when we heard, you know, that this is going to be sold, is, you know, what's the purpose of designating a unique natural area? Like, what is our job after that? Do we protect it, or, you know, what do we do in the future here? So let me just describe the UNA 62. It's called Maplewood Glen and the Lake Slopes. It's characterized by forested slopes on the west side of Cayuga Lake. It's dissected by streams. Much of the area is undisturbed and classified as high-quality examples of forests. It has some 150-year-old trees, is a biological corridor, an example of plant communities, scenic and aesthetic value, contains rare and exotic or rare and scarce plants, and parts of it are old-growth forest. In the town of Ulysses, we would also note that it's on highly erodible soils because of the slopes. So it's unsuited for development for that reason, which is why we designated that a conservation zone. And also, Route 89 is the scenic byway characterized by the trees. So if it's put up for sale at auction, it will be developed. We've already had some calls on it. And so the part of it that's makes it unique is that it's not developed. So that uniqueness will go away forever. I know that county planning has talked to New York State Parks. They don't want it. Finger Lakes Land Trust, they don't want it. And Town of Ulysses has no money to buy it. We have that tax cap, too. So, again, that we're not getting taxes from it now, neither the town or the county. So the question is, you know, would the county be willing to keep it as what wild land right now, or willing to donate it to the town of Ulysses, who would be happy to have it? I know that a common refrain is, you know, develop, develop, develop in order to keep taxes down. But I just note that the town of Ulysses vies for with the town of Lansing as the least expensive taxes in the county of any of the municipalities. And Ulysses doesn't have a power plant. It doesn't have much commercial development. It doesn't have a salt mine. It has no business park. And yet we're able to keep the taxes really low. And I think one of the things that we have is these beautiful natural resources that make people want to visit and live there. Green space, again, is good for physical and mental health. So just pulling from, I mean, we have our own documents in Ulysses that would support keeping this wild, but even from the county's own building vibrant communities in Tompkins County, just excerpting a couple of pieces. On page 4 of the overview, it says, natural features focus areas are areas where natural features, ecosystems, and forest lands should be preserved. And then just another excerpt from the conclusion of the county's document that Tompkins County strives to promote sustainable practices, including environmental stewardship to benefit this and future generations and to inspire other municipalities to do the same. The way we develop land is fundamental to sustainability. Community sustainability requires a transition from poorly managed sprawl to land use planning practices that preserve natural systems. So, you know, we're following our own comprehensive plan. We've rezoned the area along the lake shore and this conservation zone. We're rezoning the ag area. We're trying to limit sprawl, increase density around Jacksonville and Trumansburg, and negotiating to preserve some other areas along the major creeks that go through our town. So we're trying to do our part, and I'm just wondering if there's any way we can continue negotiations to try and keep this parcel forever wild. So thank you for the time.
Thanks very much. We have questions we'd like to ask Liz? Carol?
Hi, Liz. I can't see you.
Hello.
Over there. Thank you. And we do with municipal officials engage in a little bit of a back and forth. So I'm trying to understand. My understanding was that this property has been under consideration and a look at what to do for about 4 years. How imminent is the potential for Ulysses having somebody who wants to do something on it or possibly purchase it?
Calls in this week to purchase it. Yeah, there are people that were calling the zoning office this week about that property.
Are they ready to make an actual offer?
I don't know.
And what's the date, Rick? What's our date that people would have to make an offer?
We're past the date, and for this particular property, which is in my auction report later this evening, it has been added by the GL committee, that and another property. So we still have time for this one. We could remove it from the auction list, but the auction is June 20th.
And the date after which it costs us, what does it cost us to then remove it once we've given the list to the auctioneer?
We'd have to pay the auctioneer a set fee for removing this particular property.
Well,
so building on that, what I heard Liz say was that there was an interest by the town in acquiring it, but the inability to actually pay money for that. I guess the question for Jonathan, do we have ability to make a gift to a municipality? Or would we have to get fair market value for something?
I'll have to look into it. I can't say that for sure.
Could I mention, there was a similar request from the town of Dryden for a small house in Varna a few years ago that we did not gift it at that point.
We could not gift.
Martha?
So we're talking about 1284 Taganic Boulevard, is that right? So it's the last one in your foreclosure report. Okay. So it says the recommendation, and if I understand this correctly, this is what the GO committee recommended, that it should be included, though, with 100-foot no development or vegetation removal deed restriction within the Black Diamond Trail, and that it goes through that this was first identified and with help from the 2012 auction to try to get the state to buy it, et cetera, a number of steps over a number of years to try to preserve the land. So I don't know. It looks like, Dan, you have something to add to this.
No, I'm just letting you know that everything you're saying is accurate.
Okay, so it seems like we've tried for a while, and this does. The recommendation here is that there be protections for the trail, for the area by the trail and near the park. That's correct, right? I mean, that's something, right? I mean that.
I don't know if we can handle it here. Does the committee want to talk any more about it, Dan? Or
Well, the committee will not be meeting again before the auction, so it would require us to remove it from the auction.
Jim?
Yeah, what does it take to do that? To remove it?
Request from this.
From the auction.
A motion from this group would take would do it, I think.
It was a motion of the GO committee that simply put it back on the auction, so I would assume that a motion of the legislature here that's convenient this evening could easily remove it once again from the auction.
Let me just say I would do that, and then we give us one more opportunity to take a look at it. So whatever the appropriate time is, I would certainly do that.
You're making a motion?
Yeah.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn Morey. Discussion on the motion to remove this. Martha?
Rick, you said there's a fee already. We will have, if we do this now, we would incur a fee to the auctioneer.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the assessed value is on this. I'm not sure if anybody remembers. I know the amount of taxes that's outstanding and due is about $18,300. The assessed value, I'm not sure, but there's a floating scale on which we pay the auctioneer. It's on page one of my memo of that handout. And for a property that's up to $50,000, the fee's only $250. And then it goes up from there.
I'll take up a collection.
I'm sorry.
John?
Yeah. Could I mention, we tried for years to sell this. I went back and forth with the state on this for years and years. So that's not going to work. So it really comes down to, do we want to give it away or not? I mean, because yeah.
And I think you were going to check on that if we want to give it away. And what would it take for us to give it away if we wanted to?
A lot of people want to speak. Dan?
I will vote in favor of this to remove it and give another chance. I feel a need to say I wish you had done this a few months ago. Yeah. And if the town of Ulysses doesn't have the money, which I totally understand, a little publicity, you know, see if there are some people out there. I'll give $20. I really would. You know,
if I had known, I just found out about this about just a few weeks ago. So, yeah, if I'd known, I would have brought it to you as well. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thanks.
Peter.
Well, as you all know, I'm certainly not a lawyer, but one thing I remember from when I was on the Town of Ithaca board is that the exception to the gift clause is that any municipality can give a gift to another municipality. I thought that was the case.
All right. Let's. Anybody else? You want to vote on this motion? The motion is to direct the Director of Finance to remove this particular parcel from the auction scheduled for June 20th. All those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Opposed? I guess just me. That carried, so that will be taken off the auction.
Okay, please let me know what we can do to follow up or who I should be talking to, because we'd be happy to talk.
I suggest talking with Dan Klein as the chair of the Government Operations.
Great. Okay, thank you very much for your time.
Carol?
Let me just clarify that my willingness to withdraw it at this point and wait to see what happens is not necessarily an endorsement of the concept of giving it away, but engaging in discussions.
Yeah, great.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Liz, for coming and speaking to us tonight.
And I'll have other things the next time I come.
Well, please don't be a stranger.
Okay, thanks.
I saw the mayor and Councilman McGonigal, but I don't know where they've gone. But I guess we'll have to move on. Privilege of the floor for legislators, or we have some requests to move up some folks' resolutions. Do you want to do that before or after legislator privilege of the floor?
Sure.
Martha?
I'm sure that Heather McDaniel's children would be really delighted if we went with the William George Agency resolution first.
Anyone have any objection to doing that before our privilege?
I don't know.
Let's do that. Martha?
Okay, that's resolution. Oh, dear.
H.
Thanks, Mike. Resolution H, I'll get there. Hold on. That's one of those fun titles. Resolution of the Tompkins County Legislature as the elected legislative body of Tompkins County, New York, in accordance with Section 147F of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986, as amended, the code, approving the issuance by the Tompkins County Development Corporation of up to $3.1 million aggregate principal amount tax-exempt revenue bonds, the William George Agency for Children's Services Incorporated Project, Series 2016, and I so move.
All right, seconded by Jim Dennis. Discussion.
This was on our agenda earlier, and it was pulled because at that point it was, I think, a $2.7 million project. They sent in the interim had new construction estimates come back or bids, so that they felt they needed to increase the amount of the bond. And there are documents in your, I believe, in your red folders. There's a letter from the town. Wait a second. Too many papers. All right, that's the other one.
The short form.
Short form EAF right. Is there. Thank you. Short form EAF. It's four pages, signed April 26, 2016, by Jeffrey Daly, the director of the agency. And so that's an environmental assessment form. We've already seen the letter from the town. That's in your packet. The letter from Ray Berger, the town of Dryden planner, who has identified that this is a sort of ministerial action and doesn't require a full environmental assessment. So, but you do have the EAF there. So I know those were a couple of the questions that... So this is new information that I'm pleased that Heather was able to send to us today.
I just want to say I was talking with some of you folks, and I thought it would take 10 votes to pass this. I was incorrect. It will take 8 votes to pass this. Jim Dennis.
There was a public hearing on this. Did you already say that, Martha?
No.
Public hearing was Monday night, and two members of the IDA were at the public hearing, no members of the public, the developer, and Heather. So,
Carol?
Yeah, I'll be voting against this. I do appreciate that we now at least have the environmental assessment form, which was one of the concerns. I think it's important that we follow the procedures that were set by the Tompkins County Development Corporation in its application, where it says that even if the particular town that would normally be the lead agency doesn't require an environmental assessment, that in order to receive these bonds, that our form does require it. So I'm glad that we had that conversation. And we'll be more mindful of that in the future. I still, however, will be voting against this for content reasons. I still don't feel comfortable participating and expanding a system that sends troubled youth 200 miles away from their families instead of treating them close to home. And I understand that our only role in this is to facilitate bonds for which our development corporation receives fees, but that to me doesn't mitigate that problem. In fact, it makes it worse in some ways because I'd be participating in that system that I don't believe in for financial reward for our county, and so I'm not comfortable with that.
Anyone else? Julie Kiefer.
Well, I appreciate having the short environmental assessment form suddenly appear today. I see that it's dated in April. There was no reason we couldn't have had this at a previous meeting, as far as I can tell. And looking at the packet that accompanies this in our agenda, the form that's in there describes the project as still costing $2.7 million. and saying that it's proposed to start in March or April of this year. So there's been no attempt to revise the documents to fit our current resolution, which has gone up in monetary value. I'll be voting against this. I just don't appreciate the casual approach to this that has been obvious for a while.
Jim Dennis.
The title of the resolution has a $3,100,000 aggregate principal.
Yes, it does. But the packet from the proposer does not.
I won't argue that point, Julie.
Martha?
I'd like to have, if Heather doesn't mind coming to the microphone, I think the issue is that there was, she can tell us, but I believe she told the Development Corporation that she advised the agency to just go up to, as it says, up to $3.1 million as a safety measure, in a sense. But go ahead.
The application was submitted some time ago. It went to the IDA. We had a public hearing. And then at that time, they did receive their final construction bids, and the cost did come back a little bit higher. So we talked to bond counsel and decided to increase the amount. Generally, when you have a dollar amount in an application, bond counsel will go up higher than that just in case things happen at the bank or costs go up a little bit. Bond counsel hadn't adjusted it really high enough, so they came back and said, well, why don't you pull it and go ahead and go back through another public hearing and we'll increase the bond amount. I think generally when an application is submitted, we will make all the final changes at the end and have the applicant sign it based on the resolutions and the approvals that are given. My apologies that we didn't update the application for this meeting. In the future, we could do that. And I wanted to also address the environmental assessment form. The previous administrative director for the IDA, who was the administrative director for over 20 years, had said to me that the environmental language and the IDA's resolutions and their applications and all their policies was and has always been meant to comply with SEQR, with the State Environmental Quality Review Act. And in his time as administrator up until January, it was always, you know, regardless of the minutiae of the language in the regulations that the IDA has approved, it was, we want to make sure that these projects are complying with SEQR. And in every project that he had ever done, there was some sort of compliance with SEQR. He worked with me on this one, and as we worked through it, we felt like SEQR had been complied with. It is not unusual for an applicant to also submit an environmental assessment form, or in the case of something like Black Oak Wind, the full environmental impact statement. However, we generally don't share that with the IDA or the legislature. It may go in our file, but the SEQR resolution or the action and determination from another municipality is generally sufficient. So maybe it was a misunderstanding on my part, but if you had wanted to see the environmental assessment form, I had it in my files all this time, and I would have been happy to forward it. And I know I did forward the Speedy's permit that was submitted to the Department of Environmental Conservation after I was at the Planning Committee meeting. So there really wasn't an intent to withhold information. I did have it and gladly would have shared it.
Are we ready to vote? Anna?
I have been, I'll share a little bit about my process on this, and I do appreciate this form finally being here. I think that fills a piece for me. It's been a real struggle for me because we have put out a lot of reports and intentions, including our comprehensive plan, the District 2030, our strategy, energy plan that we just, energy roadmap that we just put out. And it's painful a little bit to, from that point forward, to pass or approve of projects that have not made an attempt to address some of the infrastructure and seek some sustainability measures. But for me, just on logistics, this fulfills the requirement that at least that I was asking for, that they had done that evaluation. I'm very hopeful for myself in the future moving forward, because we are with the IDA working with Ian to get clear standards, that we will be able to fall on the same page to encourage in the very beginning, when developers are looking to put their projects together, that they bring in assistance to help them think about it in the most sustainable way possible. So I guess I'm just sort of putting that out there, that that's something that I would really love to see. But I understand that this project did fall before that. And this document for me does fulfill at least that requirement. But moving forward, that's certainly where my vote will fall, to make sure that has been looked at, so that any project does help move us in the direction of our goals that have been stated in our comprehensive plan and our 2030 plan and our energy roadmap and our strategy plans, for sure. So thank you for this.
Martha, wrap us up and let's vote.
Just the idea on Thursday, we'll be looking at the report from Tatum Engineering as a consultant for the county on possible incentives that would make sense for IDA and TCDC projects. So that's coming Thursday, and I know people are impatient, but just when we say stuff doesn't mean it's so. Maybe on Star Trek, but, you know, we have to go through a process, and the IDA and TCDC are going to be looking at that beginning on Thursday.
Let's go to a vote. All those in favor of the Resolution H, which is approving the issuance of bonds for the IDA through the IDA for the William George Agency, please raise your hand.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Those opposed? Two opposed. That's 12-2. Is that right? That motion passes. Jim?
Mike, I just want to say for the public record that the IDA, the staff people do their work exceptionally well, and to hear a comment that I would have liked this sooner gives a feeling that the agency and the staff has a cavalier approach to the way they do things, and they do not. We have been evaluated by the Comptroller of New York State. We've been asked to do a couple of things to the way we operate, and we are doing that. We have one of the exemplary agencies in all of New York State, and I just want people to understand that.
Thank you, Jim. Martha, I want to come back to you for the REC resolution, but I want to go to Peter, if I could, please, because I see Debbie's out there waiting from OAR. Peter, would you be able to move the reentry resolution? I think it's resolution L.
I would not only be willing to do that, I would be pleased to do that. I think this is a very important thing that we have passed, and I think I myself will put my hand up as far as it goes. So I'll introduce it.
Is there a second? Seconded by Leslin. Discussion.
What page are we on? 34.
Are we ready to vote? This is setting up the coordinator that we talked about earlier today in the special HHS meeting. Martha?
Yeah, just so the public knows, this is something that we put $100,000 into the contingent fund in the budget deliberations last year for this year, pending a plan for reentry, and the Community Justice Alternatives ATI Board and Probation Department have worked together, along with Deb Dietrich from OIR, to come up with that plan. And so that's been through public. It was first approved by CJATI, and then obviously by the committee. And so this is sort of fulfilling what we asked of staff and the nonprofits to collaborate on and they're ready to go forward. So this would put in place through the probation department setting up a contract with a nonprofit agency for basically a case manager type person, and along with support for the for our existing day reporting program, that in the afternoon hours when the facility is not the physical facility is not being used by drug court and by day reporting folks, that it could be used for reentry, and so there's some additional money for that, and then a small amount for fundraising for developing for pursuing grants to make this sustainable. So it's a I think a mixed approach that has a lot of heft to it, and I look forward to us to seeing what kind of successes we'll have.
I probably also should have mentioned, waiting for this resolution, is our probation commissioner, who is Pat Buchel, who's worked on this a lot, too. Are we ready to vote? It's a short-form roll call. I got some more comments, I guess. Leslin, then Dooley.
So I wondered if the Pat and or Deb can speak to how this will work. I saw it in the plan in conjunction with what's happening now in the ultimate reentry opportunity. Are we duplicating services here, or how is this going to work? Because UROs mean in existence grant funded, and I just wonder if you all can share with me how do you see those two things working together or not at all.
Well, I see the reentry coordinator.
Yeah, turn on the mic.
Turn it on. It's not. I believe it's on. Maybe I'm just not speaking into it. Can you hear me now?
You're not on.
Turn it on. You want to sit at the front?
Okay. So here we go.
There now you're on.
All right. I see the reentry coordinator working collaboratively with URO. URO has been coming to CJATI meetings and informing us as to the progress they've been making with their process, and they're starting up a mentoring program. I see total cross purposes in working together and having reentry participants maybe being mentored. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to be working together. There's a lot of mutual issues we can be working on, housing issues, the mentoring program, certainly. What else, Debbie?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I think of things like, will we be competing for the same grant monies? Because URO is grant funded, they'll be looking for more grants. Are we?
No, I think the goal would be possibly even looking for grants together, mm-hmm. To be working on some of these issues together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would just say that URO is very process oriented, and it's one of seven collective impact projects now in the county, and that this position is would be well informed by that process, but that it's really going to be working and coordinating existing program so that people who are coming back to the community can access services today, and that the URO process is looking forward over a longer horizon. I don't see a conflict. It's hard to combine program and process and keep that running smoothly, but we've been working. I'm on the advisory committee of URO, too, so we're trying to establish a collaborative engagement. Now, would the county go for Park Foundation funding? I would hope that Park, having shown its commitment to URO, would be interested in other initiatives around reentry and would want to expand their work in that area.
Thank you. Thank you for the latter half of what you said in terms of more collaborative work rather than... Thanks.
Julie Kiefer.
thank you. I'm glad this is happening. The final resolved makes it clear that this is becoming a target funded in our 2017 budget, which means tonight we are making a 2017 budget decision. I just think that should be clear.
Martha Robertson.
Well, as far as that goes, it was target funding within the contingent fund that we voted last year, voted for this year.
For this year.
So this will not, this doesn't increase our overall target budget. This is already in as target funding. Leslin, as the, you know, the CJ, URO has an actual seat on the CJATI mm-hmm. board. I'm also on that advisory, on URO's advisory committee, and they're mentioned here in the plan. And one thing they say a lot when people ask a little bit about, well, is there a conflict of purpose or whatever, aside from the mentoring program, they don't intend or want to actually run any programs, in a sense. They don't want to do this kind of case management, for example. So I think everybody's really sensitive to the need not to duplicate any efforts or compete, but to everybody sort of be force multipliers for each other.
Peter Stein.
I spoke before about the LEADS program, and I think that this is an example. I mean, a lot of people initially think about the LEADS program when you have no chief and you got a whole lot of people working together, you end up with chaos. And that's often the case, but it's not always the case. And it seems to me that this is, in fact, in this particular program is an example of that, of two organizations which together are sharing the work that has to be done in a way that they want to do it and that they feel comfortable doing. And I think we ought to look in the future for more of those opportunities.
Okay, can we proceed to a vote? Short form roll call, please.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Are there any of you who wish to be recorded as a no? That seems to be unanimous. Thank you. Thanks for all the work that went into this. Martha, let's go back to you. Could you bring up Resolution J?
Yes, absolutely, and I'll point you again to your folders. As adopted by committee, Resolution J, urging the New York State Public Service Commission to allow customers to retain ownership of renewable energy certificates from New York State Energy and Research Development Authority, NYSERDA-funded projects. I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Anna Kellis. Discussion, go to Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I appreciate that this issue was brought to our attention, and while I don't, I wish that we would be looking as a state at other tools that I think would be stronger than RECs. This is the game that the state set up, and I don't think that the state ought to be changing the game in the middle for people who invested money based on one set of assumptions. And I certainly don't think, even more strongly, that they should then turn around and give those away to anybody else, in particular the utilities that should be incentivized in other ways, using other tools to increase the renewable energy in a way that they should have been doing for years. We had a lot of discussion about this in committee yesterday?
Yeah.
For a long time, and there were a lot of changes that could be made. Is the one that's labeled in your red packets labeled proposed changes to be considered? Are those the ones
yeah.
you and I wrote about, Martha?
If I can explain, you have...
Please.
proposed changes by Dooley Kiefer, and then proposed changes to be considered. I, at Carol's suggestion, yesterday we got Dooley's, suggestions that you have here. So Carol asked me specifically, since I was going to move the resolution, which of Dooley's would I consider friendly and therefore could just be accepted if, please streamline that a little bit. So that's what I did here. That's what's in what the things that are underlined and a couple small cross-outs, and I really appreciate Kathy Covert keeping us on track with this.
Thank you for answering that question. And so I'd like to offer these as an amendment.
We're looking at the proposed changes to be considered document.
Those are the ones that are friendly.
Well,
friendly.
Potentially. So I would like to offer these that are outlined here as an amendment, and then
the friendly ones you're talking
and
about.
And I would say those are friendly, yes. What you see.
And I would second that.
So it's friendly to the mover and friendly to the seconder.
Right. Yes.
Okay, and then I have two additional small things that I think would capture the spirit of what the committee talked about yesterday. And I also just want to thank Martha. If you look at the timestamp on her sending out these changes, this was at 2:56 in the morning, I think. So it was a lot of work to go through the many changes that the committee tried to deal with in short order and didn't really have time to do justice. So I want to thank both Dooley for offering, especially some of these more substantive, and Martha for going through it. And then there were just two small other ones that I would like to offer. Offer them as a package. What the one would be in the second to last resolved.
Oh, are you looking at Dooley's now? Or are you just?
I'm looking at the. It doesn't matter. It's the same in either one. Okay. No, well, in the one that we just.
Let me just
passed or the original.
We have resolution J moved. We have some minor amendments that were friendly out of proposed changes to be considered. Mm-hmm. So we're still looking at Resolution J with those changes. So can you refer to Resolution J?
Sure. Yes. In Resolution J, I don't have the line numbers because I printed this out before I saw it in line numbers. But it would be in the second to last resolved, as is in your packets or in this new one, and just before the words, and be it further, I'd like to add the words, whether through recs and or additional tools in the future. And the other one is a similar vein. I'll explain them after I tell you what they are. I think it's the fifth to last whereas. It starts, whereas this proposal, if adopted, would change contracts retroactively, undermine the investments and commitments that many entities have made. And I want to change, undermine confidence in the system that has been making the renewables market viable, to just undermine confidence in one of the tools in the system that has been making the renewables market viable.
So you're moving.
So both of these just fit with the theme that the committee talked about. I think that that RECs aren't the only tool. We don't want to get into saying that they should be the only tool.
The one in the whereas is friendly, and I'm not sure where you wanted the other one to go.
Okay. So in the final substantive resolve, the resolve just
before
who was sending it to.
You want this at the very end? Because I don't.
Yes.
This, I don't see.
So after the words.
Goals,
our respective and renewable energy goals, I want to say whether through RECs and or through additional tools in the future.
Here's my thing. I don't want this to be an or. I don't want them to say, all right, we're going to do what we want to do on RECs, but we'll look at other tools in the future. I would rather it say through RECs and additional tools in the future, if that
would be okay with me. I just don't want us to go on to be misunderstood as going on record one way or the other.
We got it.
Okay, through RECs and additional tools.
I would consider both of those also friendly if Martha's okay with that.
Got it, yep.
I love you all.
Thank
very
you.
Let me, I want to make sure. I want to make sure Kathy Covert knows what we're doing. Are you with us? All right. Please, all right, let's take them one at a time. On the whereas, tell us what it's supposed to say.
I've got the second line of whereas. It says, commitments that many entities have made, comma, undermine confidence in one of the tools in the system that has been making blah, blah, blah.
All right. All right, now in the resolved.
At the very end of it, which it now says, to meet our respective and crucial renewable energy goals, add through RECs and additional tools in the future.
Okay. Those are friendly to the mover and the seconder.
Can I just ask if it could be and or?
No. I don't want them to. I don't want or in there.
I just told her it could be and.
Okay. Thank you. Yep.
All right. So is there anyone else that has further discussion on this resolution? Julie Kiefer.
Well, I'm quite lost because I can't find the right page, but I have Dan's copy, so I've counted down. Whereas is by number, and I'm looking at whereas, I guess it's number 4, which says under federal and state rules, ownership of the RECs is required to claim the environmental attributes or greenness of energy produced from renewable resources, and that is not a true statement. Tompkins County has renewable energy on its library roof and on its buildings, and we do not have those RECs, but we are able to describe them as renewable energy. So that's an untrue statement. Similarly, the next one, whereas 5, it's legally possible to declare an entity is using renewable energy only if the entity owns the RECs associated. For the same reason, that's not accurate. And I can't vote for something that has inaccuracies in it. I worked on this resolution for a number of hours in a row. I gave part of a day to it. I don't get up at 2 a.m., so I just...
Are you making a motion to make those amendments?
All right, I'll move to remove those inaccurate whereases.
Is that friendly?
No. And I'd like Ed Marks or Bert to speak to that, if they would.
Ed, do you want to speak to that?
And while he's getting up, let me just say this started out as a resolution that Irene Weiser, chair of Tompkins County Council of Governments, drafted. It was passed by TCOG unanimously, with one abstention, a week and a half ago. I then revised it to make it applicable to the county. Ed and Katie Borghella looked at it and made suggestions. Sarah Zemanek from Cornell, the same, and so did Merrill Kramer, the attorney who's working with Cornell and many other entities. So they all had lots and lots of comments, and that's the result of what went to PDEC yesterday. So just a little background there.
I don't have the language in front of me right now to look at, but in general, the I think it would be correct to say that where there are renewable energy credits associated with the energy being developed, that you have to own them in order to claim the green attributes. There may have been renewable energy projects done before there were renewable energy credits, and you can claim it if you own it. That may be a distinction, but I think in general the sense of what it says in the context in which it's being stated seems accurate, though I suppose you could take a fine point and say it doesn't apply in every case.
I think it refers to specific protocols such as meeting our obligations under the Ithaca 2030 district, or if we wanted to, when we do a greenhouse gases inventory. And the purpose of the renewable certificates is so that the same, photovoltaic panel isn't claimed more than once, right? So
right. In all the accounting measures, that are being used in various cases do require that they have to be, you have to have some evidence. Renewable energy certificate is the most common evidence these days that you own those green attributes. If somebody else has it, you cannot claim it. That's for certain.
So that's what this language is talking about.
Yes.
So it's not friendly. Dooley has made a motion. Is there a second to Dooley's motion? Motion for an amendment.
I don't want to second it.
Carol?
I want to offer.
Let me just get through this. Is there a second? Not hearing a second, that dies. Go ahead, Carol.
So I just want to test some alternative wording that might make it more correct. Only if it's friendly to Bert over there. If we said, whereas under federal and state rules, ownership of the RECs is required, and add the words, if an entity desires to use those RECs to claim the environmental attributes. Since I agree there are other methods through which one can claim greenness.
Are you addressing that as a question?
Well, I'm asking both Dooley if that would satisfy her and Bert and Ed if they thought that would still be meet your legal requirements. You want me to read it again?
Yes, please.
Okay. Whereas under state and federal rules, ownership of the RECs is required, and I'd add the words, if an entity desires to use those RECs and go on to claim the environmental attributes or greenness of energy produced from renewable resources. We'd be adding the words after required, if an entity desires to use those RECs to.
I don't understand what...
Bert, if you're welcome to speak at the microphone if you want, or not speak at all. It's up to you.
Can we just use the proper resolution?
Put it in the form
if we're going to do this.
Well, there was a question. She was looking for an answer. So we can try to get an answer to the question, if it's possible. If not, then...
So I'm sorry. I didn't understand the distinction between what it says now.
That's understandable.
Dooley is making the point that RECs isn't the only one can claim greenness. And so I'm just suggesting that we clarify that wording to say, if you are going to use RECs, you actually have to own the RECs.
That's what this says now.
Yes. So my understanding is, I hate to say I'm not a scientist, but I'm not a lawyer. But I've talked to a number of lawyers about this. And from the Federal Trade Commission on down, it's becoming clear as the markets get clearer and the rules get clearer and accounting gets more important as everyone gets more serious about reducing energy, that the RECs have to – when you're claiming you're producing and using – renewable energy, you have to own the RECs. If somebody else owns the RECs, like a utility, you're using brown power because they are able to produce brown power and offset it with those RECs. So they're worried about double counting. And the way I understand, so there's a winery, for instance, that we've been talking to over in Seneca Lake that wants to put on their labels. The winery is 100% renewable based on solar power that has been incentivized and subsidized by NYSERDA. They will no longer be able to do that because they don't own the RECs if this, in fact, comes to pass where the NYSERDA withdraws the RECs and assigns them to utility.
Can you claim to have a green project if you don't go through NYSERDA at all and just fund it yourself?
Yeah, I believe, yes, I think you can. And then you have to register your own RECs, but NYSERDA would have no... If NYSERDA didn't subsidize it, I think you can own the RECs.
Carol, do you want to offer an amendment?
Well, I thought I did.
No, you asked a question.
Okay. Let me ask Dooley one other question. How many of these do you have?
How many of what?
Other changes. Are these the only two?
See her hole in the fence.
She did not move them as changes.
No, I understand that, but you offered 2 points.
If I keep working on these, will there be others?
There may be one more, but Carol, what your language doesn't do it for me either. Thank you.
I'll withdraw.
All right. Let's go to Anna next, then Martha.
I think it's really what I understand is relatively simple. What I think Dooley is saying, at least as far as I can understand, that not all green projects have RECs associated with them, and this is, in your mind, saying that that the RECs, they have to have RECs in order to be owned or identified as such.
It's not my mind; it's what the language says.
But in my interpretation of this, I actually don't agree with that. I mean, to me, it's simply saying if there are RECs associated with it, then in order to identify it as green, you have to own those RECs, simply by saying the RECs. So, I mean, I do hear what you're saying, but I feel that this language does indeed specify that if there are RECs associated with it, those RECs must be owned.
Martha?
Thanks, Anna, and thanks, Bert. And this claim has legal meaning here, and this is not some just generic, we like green power. No, there's legal meaning here, and there's monetary value that goes along with it. And the fact that NYSERDA, or the Public Service Commission, and we're not clear who's really behind this, is what they are doing is getting everybody to register their RECs, which, by the way, I don't understand. That should already – I don't know why they need a big deal to do that. Don't they already know? But they don't. Okay. Get everybody to register their RECs. That's fine. But then they're sweeping the value and claiming that value entirely to be under their control with, we understand, and it's, as Bert said, a footnote on page 90, on some page of a 94-page document, with the intention to give that value to the utilities, who will not have themselves invested in any of these green projects, but then they will be able to say, look how green the grid is. We are X percentage of the way towards a 50% renewable electricity grid, without having had to pay for it or do any of the hard work to put those projects in place. By the way, tradable RECs, this is how Black Oak Wind Farm and many other projects get investors who will put money towards projects like this. And claim is not just a generic, we get to claim, blah, blah. This has legal meaning, has financial value, and this is trying to stave off theft.
Jim Dennison, let's please vote.
I would like to call the question.
Well, I think we could just proceed to a vote, hopefully. Well, no, Dooley's got her hand up. So we have a motion to call the question. Is there a second? Seconded by Mike Sigler. We'll move to a vote on whether to call the question. All those in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have two opposed, so that passes. We will move to the consideration of the vote on the Resolution J with the friendly amendments offered by Carol Chalk. All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. That passes.
Mike, I'd like to ask that my reasons for voting against this be clarified in the minutes, and I'm not sure if I have said enough tonight to make it clear. So,
can you say basically what they are so that they can capture them?
I can't vote for a resolution which has what are, in my mind, inaccuracies. There's also a reference in there to a letter to the city that similarly indicates that one can claim greenness without having RECs. I found that letter almost incomprehensible, but the way it's characterized here, it also is in conflict with the other whereases. I just cannot vote for something that is internally inconsistent. I personally also feel that it's unfortunate that we have market in RECs and in carbon credits. By turning these into market commodities, it has made mischief in many places in the world, and I'm sorry that we're part of that.
All right, thank you.
But I support Cornell's need because they're a they're a corporation that needs to have an accounting system of this sort, too. Thank you.
Thank you very
Thank
much,
you
Bert
for,
and Ed.
For coming tonight. Ed, are you waiting for anything else tonight?
If we could do the farmland protection grant, that would be great.
Sorry, I didn't
farmland
hear that.
Farmland protection.
Aye. Can we take aye?
Yep. Authorization to apply for New York State assistance payments for farmland protection implementation project funding to hold a conservation easement on Lounsbury Farm in the town of Caroline, ID 6390.
Seconded by Dan. That's his district. Discussion? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Ed. Anyone else waiting for a resolution? We'll clean them all up. Go back to our privilege of the floor for legislators. Anyone want to speak? Carol Chalk.
Well, really briefly, I just want to thank the folks who brought us the Ithaca Festival. It was a wonderful event. I feel badly. We always expect a little bit of rain at the Ithaca Festival, but they didn't deserve what they got, at least in the city of Ithaca. I don't know how it was throughout the rest of the county, but the kind of downpour that we usually can only last 5 minutes lasted for hours. But apparently people were still out there. This year they tried new things. I like to see organizations try new things, and I think some of them worked very well. I've never seen so many people at the parade. It was just quite enjoyable. So thank you. It's a lot of work by a lot of people.
Thanks, Carol. Jim Dennis.
I want to mention a young kid in Trumansburg, a member of the Trumansburg High School. His name is Daniel Lapp, and he came in fifth in the New York State golf tournament. But the interesting part of this young man, he's been in the golf tournament since he's in eighth grade. So he's not, it was not just a one-shot affair. He's done very well over a long period of time playing golf. And, I think he should be, he didn't win, but, there's everyone who plays golf doesn't win. And I thought it was a really cool thing for kid to have that kind of stick-to-itiveness and do something like that. So I just wanted to mention it.
And he'll be on your foursome at the county?
He's going to join my foursome for the county, for Robert. Tompkins County Golf Tournament.
No sandbaggers there.
Thanks, Mike. I want to second the point about the parade, and I like that the festival did. I love it. The fact that part of the festival was over by GIAC, that was great. And I especially want to thank Marsha Lynch for rallying all of us and an EMS truck and a fire truck from the airport and a highway truck and a recycling truck and quite a few of us from the from different departments as well as the legislature to march in the parade and get those cool shirts. And thank you very much, Marsha, for making that happen. And we did have a lot of conversation about next year when it's our 200th anniversary as a county, and we think we ought to be, I don't know, at the front of the parade in period costumes, right? Dan representing us on stilts, of course. So I really look forward to doing something like that next year. So that's one thing. Now, another, at the risk of starting a debate, the news came out last night that the Associated Press had gotten in touch with Democratic superdelegates and had enough confirmations from people who've made public comments or made written statements about who they're supporting for the Democratic presidential nomination. And they had felt they had enough to count Hillary Clinton as the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party's nomination for president. Personally, I think the timing was terrible, and I don't know how you take, I don't know how you tell the press what to do. So I don't know how they're going to deal with that as far as influencing turnout, which is. not good for either of the Democratic campaigns. I think that was a real shame. I hope that does not cloud, whether it's last night or tonight or in July, cloud the realization that, as Secretary Clinton said 8 years ago, that 18 million cracks in the glass ceiling, we appear to be on the verge of cracking it. And I, for one, am really moved by the fact that finally a national party appears to be either have or will or has or whatever you want, whatever verb you want to put in there, will be represented for the highest office of the land by a woman. And I think it's long overdue. And I hope people can, aside whatever their feelings are about the candidates and the campaigns and the issues, I hope we can all take a moment and recognize that that's a pretty big deal.
Lesson of being Clairborn.
Mr. Chair, I have a request, but first I'll say thank you, Carol, for and Martha, for the big kudos to the folks in the Ithaca Festival. You all did look good, by the way, County. Of course, you wait until I'm not in the parade to get shirts, matching shirts. I'm not going to take it personally. But it certainly was a great collaborative effort. Kudos to the folks at Ithaca Festival for having us and GIAC join that part of the festival and have it over in that area. I hope we can do it again next year. Yes, despite the rain, people did come out because of who the performers were. There were still vendors out there on Sunday. And so I think overall it was a success. My request, Mr. Chair, as I'm speaking, is to please allow me to give my reports, or that I really do not feel well. I would like to leave. And so I just wanted to be able to give my two committee reports and bow out of here.
Can we finish privilege of the floor and then do it, or do you think
if
like
people
to do it right now?
If people are going to speak for 2 seconds, yes, we can finish. Go ahead. I can wait.
It's up to you. If you'd
I can
like
wait.
To go,
go
now,
ahead.
I'll do that for you.
I can wait. Go ahead.
Anna.
No, I simply was going to say that there's a few of us that did march with the legislator and the county that are determined to make sure that we have a huge showing of the county in our bicentennial. And from my personal experience, it was such a pleasure to hear people say back to us, thank you for your work. And I just wanted to, for anybody who's watching, say thank you to the whole community for showing up to the parade and sharing that, because I know that everyone in the county, at least from my experience, does an amazing job and works really hard. And we work on really difficult issues sometimes that aren't popular. So to get that feedback was a very empowering and heartwarming experience as my first time walking in the parade. So thank you.
I would say that it didn't rain on that parade. It was an absolutely beautiful night. Had the privilege of walking with our county group and seeing the huge crowd that was out. It was very impressive. It was out there. I know our own Dan Klein walked it on stilts and then came back and walked with us. And it was pretty nice. But don't rest on your laurels. Remember, this Saturday in Dryden is the Dairy Day Parade. Ours is in the morning. Come on out and march down the street. It's not quite as long a trip, but no less fun. And it's important that we let folks know that not only is the bicentennial coming next year, but what we do for folks, what our employees and staff does for folks every single day of the year. And one other thing I wanted to mention, I didn't say it when we were working on the Rex resolution, is thanks to Michelle Potorf, who stayed after the committee last night and worked until well into the evening to make sure that Martha could work on the resolution at 2 a.m. So. Anyone else? Not before I go to Blessing. Dooley?
There's still time for people who are tired of watching our meeting to make it to the Science Cabaret at 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I'm losing my mind.
Lot 10?
No, not Lot 10. The TC3 restaurant.
Cultivare.
Yes, it's the science and culture of fireworks tonight, and they have four speakers. Bill Turner, a state-certified pyrotechnician and manufacturer of explosives. Bob Hollenbeck, a pyrotechnician and owner of Proximity Pyrotechnics. Jesse Viverica, producer, co-founder, and CEO of Viverica Brothers Productions. And Roald Hoffman, theoretical chemist at Cornell and a poet. So it's going to be a really neat show. When we close up shop here, I'm going to go there.
I would go now.
I may do that.
Okay. All right. Let's accommodate the request from Leslin, who's not feeling well. Leslin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Could you, which committee do you want to do first?
Whoever comes first. I'll start with Workforce Diversity.
Workforce and Diversity and Inclusion Committee.
So the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee did not have a formal meeting last month, but some members of the committee and all the leadership of the county had an opportunity to engage in discussion around the focus groups, and more information will follow to the, at the committee level and on what some of our facilitators heard. Engaged from participating in the focus groups with some recommendations of things that we should move forward. Many of those things we've already began to work on through our steering committee slash leadership team that stemmed out of the diversity, out of the climate survey. So that's continuing to happen. And a small group of us are continuing to work on the county's diversity plan. That's my report.
Any questions? Leslin, why don't you go right ahead with the Health and Human Services Committee?
Well, you all were present for the Health and Human Services Committee. You heard a presentation. You had questions. There are more questions to follow. I do want to say in all seriousness that I know that people had all the questions and we have all the comments, and I'm hoping that within the committee we will continue the conversation. Rich is right there in the room. Rich, you brought up the question around, I think it was you, forgive me if it wasn't, how are we collecting statistics? Do we know numbers? Do we? And that's one of the things that the committee asked at our last committee meeting. And we were told some of the reporting, even around overdose, the reporting mechanism is a little different, because what you hear now is that, you know, somebody died from asphyxiation as opposed to an overdose. And so state requirements are such now that if it is related to an overdose, that we do report that as well. That's coming so that we will get better and more accurate numbers on you know, numbers of people who were addicted, deaths from overdose, et cetera, and all of the various drugs. So as a committee, we have been working on this for a couple of months now, and we'll continue to, because we realize that it is a huge issue within our county. So I just wanted to share those two things. And our next HHS committee meeting is 2 weeks from, I don't remember, the 13th? Next week? Next week. It's whenever the third Monday is at 3:30 right here.
Leslin, that special meeting, which, of course, is right before this meeting, that's why we were all here,
yes.
Thankfully, I thought was very informative, and we appreciate your committee holding that.
Thank you, and thanks to Joe for his footwork in making scheduling the mayor to be here.
Question?
The 20th. It's a correction. It's the 20th.
Yeah,
it's the third Monday.
Anything else for Leslin before we let her go? All right. Thank you, Leslin.
Thank you.
Feel better. I guess we go up to the chair's report. I wanted to bring something to everyone's attention. It has to do with Tompkins Cortland Community College. And as you know, we co-sponsor that with Cortland County and the state of New York. And the buildings out there are owned by the two counties and the state of New York. They had some severe winds out in Dryden, and they began experiencing problems with the roof on the main building. And the problems are very severe. They called in engineers to do a report on the condition of the roof, which is over 20 years old. And there was a meeting held today at the college. Dan and I were there. Joe was there. Dr. Haynes and his staff, and also the chair of Cortland County Legislature, the chair of their budget committee, and the chair of, or in their county budget officer were all there. The roof's going to have to be fixed, replaced. And it's going to be a $3.5 million project, half of which the state of New York will pay from an emergency capital program that they have. That's already been winding its way. The other half, which is what, about $1.75 million, is going to have to be paid by the two counties, split by our share of 67%.
I think it's
63% to Tompkins and 37% to Cortland. That's over $1 million to Tompkins and over $600,000 to Cortland. The timing here is difficult. We saw a video of when they went up on the roof in this wind, and Joe, I think, described it as it reminded him of the old movies of the bridge in California that got hit in the wind and was rocking up and down. I'm sure we've all seen it. The roof was actually undulating from the wind, and hopefully they will send out that small video piece so we can all see it. It was very scary to kind of see it. In order to get this done this year, we're going to have to move this right along. I'm going to ask Jim to work with the county administrator and the college as far as the budget committee. We're going to have to decide how we're going to pay for this. Cortland seemed to be quite interested today in paying their share in cash out of their reserve. And how we will pay it, we're going to leave that to Rick and Joe to work on that. So I thought this was important enough for me to report on to you today so you know this is happening. Not fun to have to do that, but we've got to protect our building out there. Questions, Carol, then Martha?
Has anybody gone and looked at whether nearby trees were knocked down, at any possible touchdown of a small tornado, which would maybe enable it for it to be eligible for FEMA relief? Or any other way in which it might be?
You got to have a big dollar figure to get FEMA.
Yeah, looking for insurance recoveries. So there's going to be an adjuster that comes out. They said soon. They are pursuing an insurance claim, but they're not optimistic that insurance will cover, but they are exploring that. Mike's right about FEMA. The thresholds for damage have to be very high.
What's the building used for, Mike?
Somebody else had a hand up. Martha, then Mike.
One word. Casino? Are any more casino checks coming? Yeah.
Let's let the committee talk about that and make some kind of a recommendation to us. Mike?
What's the building used for?
I'm sorry?
What's the building used? I mean, what's the utilization of it?
The main building.
We're talking about the main building. So that's where all the classrooms are and all the administration, all of the food service, has the student center attached to it. It's not the new athletic building, but it is the original building, and changes have been made to that. Okay. I don't have any chair's appointments tonight. Let's go to our other reports. Let's start with the county administrator, Joe Mariano.
Thanks, Mike. I don't have much. The state legislature is still in session, will be for the next week or so. There's a couple of items that we have that are important to us that are still in play there. One is what has come to be known as the Fahey-DeFrancisco bill, or vice versa, depending on which house you're giving credit to. It's the bill that would call for the state to gradually take over the full cost of indigent defense in every county in New York State. It seemed to die early in session. It has come back strong. There's been a compromise by the sponsors. What had been a four-year takeover plan is now a seven-year takeover plan, but it's still a takeover plan, and it looks like all the costs of indigent defense over that period of time, if this passes and is approved by the governor, would be taken over by the state, and I believe we would still provide the service locally, which would be our assurance that quality would remain where it is now. It has passed unanimously through the Assembly, and it's working its way through committees in the Senate. Clock is ticking. I don't know if it's going to come out the way we hope, but it is clear that it has traction and it has support. So that would be very good news indeed if that were to pass.
Joe, can I mention that I received a letter from Senator DeFrancisco in response to our letter in support. He writes, "Thank you for your letter of May 26. You're welcome. I'm doing all I can to get the bill passed before the end of the session."
Great. The other isn't so global. It's more parochial. It's the legislation that you requested of the state that relates to affordable housing and the way affordable housing is taxed everywhere in New York State. You recall that the legislation that we wanted would recognize that there are limitations on the resale value of homes under some of the affordable housing projects that are built in our community. Resale is limited by the terms of a land lease, but we have to assess it as if there were no limitations. So we asked the state for legislation to allow us to create an exemption to recognize that. That, too, is moving through committees. It's changed a bit since we asked for it. We had originally hoped that we could simply flip the on switch on, and if the state granted that exemption, that every taxing jurisdiction in the county would have to apply this exemption. That would be the exception to the rule. The rule is usually when you have these exemptions, the county is given the authority to have the exemption, but each of the taxing jurisdictions has to decide whether they want to put that in place or not. It's the case with veterans, seniors, all the other major exemptions. So as it worked through committees, it was clear that it was not going to get through at least the Assembly our way. So there was a language change that will make it a more conventional exemption, where if we secure this legislation that's in place, then the county, the city, the school districts, the municipalities would decide whether they want this exemption to apply for their taxing purposes. So not quite what we wanted, but still, this is kind of a breakthrough if it happens. And I will tell you that Barbara Lifton's office especially has been very supportive in this. Tom O'Mara's office has been very helpful as well. So it's also making its way through committees in the legislature. Different topic. As we talked about last time, the draft capital plan was presented at F&I yesterday. And it's available. So it's in the F&I packet. So I know many of you have an interest in what's in there. You want to see the details. You want to see the way cash flows. It's in a report that's in the F&I packet, so you can access it online. If you can't get it, let me know, and I'll just send you a copy of it. But take some time, look through it. Come budget time, we will go through all the details again. But it's a really good time, if you have comments on it, to make those comments known. Very quickly, I just want to say what many of you have said, which is thanks to all the people that participated in the parade. We had reps of DSS, Emergency Response, DWI, Administration, Clerk, DMV, ITS, Health, Solid Waste, the Airport, Highway, Sheriff, Personnel, plus I think nine of you came. So we had a really good cross-section of the county. I did hear Anna talking about with Amy Guerreri how next year we're going to have a multitude there. But it was a really great turnout, and it was a lot of fun, and I think it really showed who we are. Last thing, the ID badges that we've talked about are now going into production, so expect those. I'm kind of a beta tester, and I noticed that everything on the card looks to be pretty good. We've obviously got a flaw in the camera that we're going to have to fix because the pictures make you look much fatter than you really are. And it must be the flash that just washes any color out of your hair. So we'll work on the camera, but everything else seems to be good to go for a countywide ID badge system. And that's a part of our workplace violence prevention program. And that's my report.
Questions? Martha.
As I drove up here, the Susan Arbutus program, Assemblywoman Fahey and Senator DeFrancisco were on the air talking about the bill. An important point is that those guidelines that I talked about at the last, I think at our last meeting here, where the court settlement was going to apply much more generous guidelines for eligibility for county, for public defense. Those guidelines were set to go into effect in October. That's been moved for the Hurl-Herring counties. Those six counties, five counties, those will still go into effect in October. For everybody else, April 1st. So that certainly suggests that fits with the state's budget calendar. So I assume that'll get wrapped up into if they pass that funding bill, and it's for family court as well as criminal. So that's good news on moving the deadline, at least.
Carol?
Yeah, I do have some concerns for the homeowners under the new wording I went and looked at the wording in the affordable housing or housing trust bill, because it means that a homeowner who has bought a house in one part of our county may have their assessment set differently depending on what their town or their school district do. They would have it set differently depending on their town or their school district. So it means we're going to have to do a lot of work. If it passes that way, we'll have to do a lot of work. For additional work, I hope that we do it to educate them about why we thought this was important to begin with. And then I also noticed that it doesn't say Tompkins County. It defines the population number as between 100,000 and 105,000. So I wondered, when do we anticipate that the population of our county is going to go over 105,000?
It's pegged to the 2010 census. So it refers to counties that in the 2010 census had populations between 100 and 105,000. It's because you're not allowed to make a specific county exemption program. So you often see it for New York City. City's over a million because there's only one of those. You see that. So the way they made this specific to Tompkins County was to peg it to our population size and to peg our population size to the 2010 census. So if our population rises to 125,000, it won't make a difference because it's based on what it was in 2010.
Well, it says the decennial census, which means that in 2020, which is really only 4 years from now, that's going to be counted again. So if we went over 105,000, people who bought their homes under one set of assumptions about where their tax, you know, whether they could afford this property with the expected taxes as well as their mortgage payments, might have the picture change very much. And again, I think our aim with that program is to not have people turn over their houses real fast, not to have people be buying those on speculation, but buy them because they expect to live in them a good long time. So I just wonder if there's any chance of tweaking that to a higher number, 110,000, which at least gives more time.
Because then you'd involve a lot of additional counties, and you've got issues then at the state level if it includes other counties. I think we, and the session will end within a week or so. So I think we are where we are. I think they've been pretty clever in the way they've tried to push this forward in spite of some things that might have otherwise caused it to go off course. So I'm not so worried about the population. Again, I think it's my understanding was it was tied to 2010. I can look again, but I think we're as good as we're going to be, and I'd view this as kind of a groundbreaking thing that we've achieved here. Could be applied by others later on, but I think it's a good one here. If it I'm not even sure it's going to pass, but.
Anything else for Joe? Thanks, Joe. Let's go to Jonathan Wood, our county attorney.
I don't have a report, but I did want to remind people in light of the REC discussion that our hydro project is we own the RECs, and it's not NYSERDA to fund it. So that does not affect us in any adverse way, at least on that project.
Any questions?
No further report.
Thanks, John. Finance Director Rick Snyder.
Thank you, Mike. I passed out a spreadsheet that most of you have in front of you. It's going to be the auction report that I usually bring to the legislature at this time. Our auction is in just 2 weeks, 13 days actually, on June 20th. And if you're looking at the spreadsheet, it actually contains more properties on it than we're really auctioning. I want you to see the 24 properties that we started with. These are the ones that we visited and toured and posted the notices back at the end of April. And then in the course of about a month and a half, we had a very good number of redemptions and a couple of installment agreements that were worked out. So what you and that's why I drew lines through the names and the properties there that have been crossed off and that either says paid off or installment agreement. What you have before you then is just on the first page, five residential properties, and on the reverse page, five vacant or commercial properties for a total of 10 properties. So this is probably the smallest number of properties that we've taken to auction, at least since I've been here. I think Helen Beach, who has been here 34 years, said, oh, no, we had one once before where we only had eight. But in recent years, this is quite a reduced number of properties that we've had to foreclose upon. And I wanted to share this list with you because the GO committee had already, as we talked about earlier tonight, had gone over the list. And that's when they make their determination to whether they're going to add some properties back onto the auction list or take one off. And if you're looking at the vacant commercial spreadsheet, the third one from the bottom says recommend pulling by planning. That simply means that this particular property is going to be removed by the action that the GL committee made on June 1st. It means that's being pulled or withheld and will not be sold at the auction. So that brings the list down to nine. Then if you turn to the memo that I supplied, I waited on today to write it so I could get the most up-to-date summary that I could give to you. What I've mentioned is, again, that it's the property sale or auction is on June 20th, and it's going to be at the space at Green Star. There are five residential and five vacant commercial parcels, but subtracting out the one for Brooklyn Road, we're down to nine. I've mentioned under the bottom part of the first page the four questions that were asked at the GO committee meeting. I could not attend that meeting, but I did gather the notes from Joe and have made an attempt here to answer your questions. One thing that comes, and some of these come up every year, some of them come up every couple of years, how many of the remaining properties are owner-occupied? Short answer is one. Out of the whole list, it's one. I've gone through and have written a narrative at the end of this memo on each and every parcel. And in that narrative, it'll tell you if it's a rented property or if it's owner-occupied or if we suspect that it's owner-occupied when it's a residential property. But I quickly added them up right before the meeting, and and the number is a grand total of one. What is the final day for potential redemption? The legal New York State redemption date is 90 days after the foreclosure is filed. So that for this year, that made the date January 15th, 2016. They talked at the committee about the various fees that we impose upon somebody who's trying to redeem a property. And the question came up, what is the fee or the penalty for redeeming a property? There's a fee added for redeeming delinquent properties after the redemption date. That fee is an additional 5% of the assessed value of that property that gets added after the final date of redemption. There is one more fee, and we call it the auctioneer's fee, and this was a fee that was implemented by Tompkins County to add for the auctioneer after they've added it to their list toward the property, taken pictures, and advertised. If a property gets removed, just like the one we removed tonight, then the auctioneer would still get paid something for his efforts. So that additional auction fee is on a sliding scale, and that's at the bottom of page one. Shows up to $50,000. It's a $250 fee. $50,000 to $100,000, it's a $500 fee. $100,000 to $300,000, the fee would be $750. And anything over $300,001 is a $1,000 fee. Is there a formal process for identifying potential parcels for housing redevelopment or rehabilitation? We met with a number of groups over the last couple of years. We did meet with the City of Ithaca and with INHS. Joe was there, Jonathan was there, myself, Helen Beach, and a number of us shared different plans and proposals for how we would get information back and forth. We determined not to come up with a formal policy or process, and we kind of handled it on a case-by-case basis. This year, if we're looking specifically at INHS, they were mailed a foreclosure package when our staff did the foreclosure mailing on October 6, 2015. INHS was actually listed as having a mortgage on two separate properties, so they received packages by certified mail. And personnel at INHS signed off on those packages on October 7, 2015. So we try to keep in touch and move the information along as best as possible. As I noted earlier, there's a brief narrative on each of those properties, both residential and commercial, shown below. And I even share notes that we keep in file that tells how we mailed the notices, whether we got responses to those notices. We add information about the various communications with renters or the landholder. We have some information from time to time on whether it's renter occupied versus owner occupied. We don't keep track of that information in a formal way, but we do try to keep notes on that information. And my last comment, and I'm not going to go down into each and every property because I'll allow you to read that on your own. Most of you are interested in what's happening in my district, what's happening in my town or village, and you can read that on your own. But I do like to share that when we do the foreclosure proceedings, we send those proceedings to the towns and the villages, two copies each. One goes to the clerk and one goes to the supervisor. If you turn to the very last page of the memo, or the last two pages, after the property by property narratives, I have a short discussion at the end on the two properties that were added back in by the GO committee. One was on Bell School Road, and that was added in, and the other one was the 1284 Teganic Boulevard parcel that was added in. But effective tonight, as a result of your motion, we are removing that second one. So if you have any questions about the auction report, I'd be glad to take them at this time.
Dan and Martha.
I just wanted to add that, you know, this foreclosure process is not a pleasant business, but that the county goes through extraordinary measures to try to find a way for homeowners to stay in their homes. So Rick Snyder personally again this year, mm-hmm. and Scott Doyle from planning, did he go with you? Personally go to each house that
well,
is...
Well, Scott didn't go this year, but okay. Jay goes from the assessment department.
Thank you. Personally goes to every house that's on the foreclosure list, knocks on the door. If someone's home, they talk with them. If not, leave a package of information. We offer payment plans. We go through the work through the towns as well to reach these people to find any way we can to not foreclose on them. That is our real goal. I just wanted to mention that.
Martha?
Yeah, thanks. Question. There are a couple of them that say credit card, certified cards signed and returned, but then they'll say that the house appeared to be vacant. So somebody's picking up the mail and they
yeah, we try it. To keep track of all the certified mail, and we make a note if the card comes back, we pretty much assume, well, at least they got the notice. That way we know somebody got the notice. That doesn't necessarily mean somebody lives there for sure, because somebody could pick it up and go to the and sign for the mail. And we also send it at every piece of mail eventually goes out first class, regular mail also, because in certain cases when people have moved or if the mail is undeliverable, that mail will come back to us, and that will alert us if we have to do more follow-up on that property.
Okay, so, but when you say the house, there's one, you know, the house, found the house vacant during auction tour, so, I mean, you look in the windows, there's no furniture, is that?
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, I mean, because it's not just that some, you know, lots of times nobody's home, but you're saying that there's, we all...
Sometimes it's very obvious.
Okay.
When it's obvious, we note it.
Got it. Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
Anna?
Super quick question. The one that you have recommend pulling by the planning GO committee, which is on Brooklyn Road, I was just curious why that was recommended.
I'm sorry, which one?
The Brooklyn Road. It says recommend pulling. I was
is that the Freeville
why.
One? Rick, do you remember the? Do you have the info on that handy? I don't.
I think that was on the corner of Fall Creek in the village of Freeville.
You're talking about the commercial property in Freeville?
No.
That was pulled? No?
I'm talking about the one that was owned by the Lois
Stafford
Trust.
You said it was
and
the
that's,
one.
Isn't that over near the.
Landlocked? Is that the landlocked one?
Natural area over there, perhaps? Could that have something to do with it?
Let me look up my notes. I'll try to get back to you.
You talk about the free on the residential?
I am talking about...
The Freeville property?
The commercial.
Oh.
There's on the commercial list, the one that's on Brooklyn Road, it's Lewis R. Stafford Living Trust. It's the third from the last one. It's the only one that's different from all the others. It's the one that you kept saying was the one that was being recommended to pull, so therefore it's 9 instead of 10. And I was just curious why GEO would recommend pulling it.
Can I just read to you from the packet? This vacant lot is on Brooklyn Road in the village of Freeville. The property... It is located across Route 38 from a 45-acre nature preserve owned by the village, subject to an easement by the Finger Lakes Land Trust. It's located within the Fall Creek Natural Area's focus area. It's, we're discussing the potential sale to the village of Freeville. They are going to meet June 7th, which is today.
Thank you. That answers my question.
Anything else? Thank you, Rick.
And then just two other items quickly. No sales tax report tonight, so we'll give you a break from that. But we finished our audit. As far as the county's field audit, the auditors will still be working with us over the next 3 to 4 weeks on preparing the financial report. But the audit, for all intents and purposes, the field is done. They may be spending a couple more days at the airport because we have them doing some extra work up there on grants and capital projects this year. But that's good news, and we're pretty much on track with finishing up the field audit. We anticipate getting a draft of the financial report, which me and my staff, we pore over that for about a week or 10 days. We should get that by about the end of this month, and we'll get the final draft right around the 4th of July, probably the 5th of July, which puts us on track for having a presentation to our budget and special audit committee at their regularly scheduled budget work session on that fourth Monday in July. And I've already talked to Jim about that, and we're setting that up, and Kathy's helping get that set up. After that, budget and special audit committee look at the financial report for 2015. It'll appear at one of the two legislative meetings in August for you to see the report and ask questions. And I made a big note this year to make sure y'all get it about a week ahead of time in PDF format so you can come with your questions. But we should be presenting the 2015 financial report on either the first or second legislative meeting in August. And the last thing was Joe and I had a discussion today, a conference call with Moody's, because as you know, all those 9 bond resolutions that you did back in April, well, we are floating the debt for some of those projects, not all, but we're pricing the debt, going to go out with some bands and bonds on June 23rd. So today we had our ratings review meeting with Moody's, which seems to be an annual event, and we should be finding out on Friday how we did with the Moody's rating company. And so we don't want to tell you what we would like to tell you, that we could get an advance increased rating to AAA, but that's what Joe and I pushed for today in our discussions with them. So that's what we've been working on the debt financing side, and those bonds will be priced on June 23rd, and we should have the money by the middle of July. And that's all I have.
Let's keep our fingers crossed. Thank you, Rick. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Martha.
It looks like Jay was also filed as a member, so it's N.
N is withdrawn.
I'm withdrawing that.
Let's do the consent agenda. Have some appointments out of the committees. To the advisory boards. Out of Planning, Development, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, to the Agriculture and Farmland Protection Board, Darren Buck, George Franz, and Robert Mazurek. Out of Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, to the Air Services Board, Michael Gary Hilf. Out of Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, to the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, Kara Nichols. Out of Public Safety Committee, to the Emergency Communications Review and Oversight Committee, Adam R. Mankey. I guess that's how you pronounce that. We have some resolutions on consent. If you want it off, just let us know. Resolution A, award of 5-year engineering consulting agreement, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. That's ID 6384. Resolution B, authorizing acceptance of a statewide Opportunities for Airport Revitalization SOARS grant from the New York State Department of Transportation to assist with marketing and promotion of the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. That's ID 6388. Out of Government Operations Committee, Resolution C, establishing standard work days for elected and appointed officials of Tompkins County. That's ID 6359. Resolution D, authorization to enter into a 5-year lease agreement for the Department of Motor Vehicles Office, that's ID 6314. Out of Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, we have Resolution E. Oh. E is off. Out of Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Resolution F, authorizing.
Off.
That's off. Resolution G, authorizing a public hearing.
Off.
You want that off, too?
Yes.
All right. With those three off, which are the three from planning, the rest of the consent agenda and the appointments, all those in favor, or I need a motion, I'm sorry. Motion by Anna. Is there a second? Seconded by Dave. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. At 7:30, we'll take 10 minutes. We'll come back and we'll do the rest of the standing committees. All right, let's go back into session. We'll start with committee reports. We have the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. David McKenna is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. F and I met Monday afternoon, and the highlight of the meeting was Joe's Capital Improvement Program report, the draft on that, and that encompassed projects from facilities, highway planning, and the airport, for a grand total of somewhere around $29 million and a local share of somewhere in the vicinity of $15 million. So that was a big presentation at that meeting. We also had the resolutions from facilities for authorization to enter into a five-year lease agreement for Department of Motor Vehicles Office, and from solid waste authorization to execute a multi-year contract for confidential paper collection and shredding services for Challenge Industries, and also a resolution on leachate transportation from the Hillview and Caswell landfills to the Ithaca Area Waste Treatment Facility, as well as from highway authorization to execute extensions of snow and ice agreements with towns in Tompkins County, and authorization to enter into a property acquisition agreement with the state of New York, reconstruction of the Cottington Road, County Route 119, safety component at Burns Road and East King Road intersections in the town of Ithaca. And we also had resolutions that were passed in the consent agenda this evening. And that pretty much concludes my report.
Thanks, Dave. Questions? All right. Just had a request from Peter to move his committee report up. So we'll go to public safety. Peter Stein is the chair.
Thank you. I have nothing to report from the last meeting. We're having another meeting on June 16th, which is my birthday. So I'm looking forward to that. And I have some question in my mind as to whether we ought to cancel that meeting because it's pretty light. But
aren't you going to bring cake?
Well, I could bring a small cake, or maybe I could hire this gentleman here to bring a cake. So
just let me know if you cancel it so I don't bring your cake.
Okay. Well, and I think there's a resolution.
Yeah, resolution, yes. K, please.
Oh, resolution K, yes. Resolution K is a routine resolution. I'd just like to move it.
Appropriation from contingent fund, replacement pay, reimbursement, sheriff's office. Is there a second? Seconded by Martha. Discussion? All those in favor? I'm sorry, short form roll call. Please call the roll.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Any further questions for Peter?
Yeah.
Julie?
I had a question on the resolution. That doesn't matter. It wouldn't change my vote. Is it one criminal investigator and three corrections officers? Is that?
I don't really remember. I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Let's move on to Transportation Committee. I'm sorry. Rich?
I just wanted to take a moment to add that Peter and I went to a presentation in Binghamton last week where the Lieutenant Governor presided over a committee that was taking testimony on the heroin and opioid crisis in New York. It was very informative, including taking just public comment, and two women came in who had children who died of overdoses. It was very powerful testimony. But the point I just wanted to make sure people were aware of is that they are trying to do something through this session on the problem. What that was not entirely clear. They were just taking information. They really weren't presenting any, so it was hard to know what will come out of this. But I think New York State is going to, quote, do something, end quote.
Peter?
I had the opportunity to make a very short presentation, a minute long, before that group. And what I told them is what I think. We all know it's a problem. We all know that it's going to cost money to fix it, and we better get some money. We want to try to play our role in this county, and we need money. We need money from Albany to be able to do anything, I think, that's meaningful at all. So,
you did it for us in 15 seconds. You did it for us in 15 seconds.
Okay, well, fast talker.
Okay, anything else for Peter? Transportation Committee, I canceled the meeting for June, and the reason for that is we had planned to have a meeting centered around discussions with the New York State Department of Transportation. They have a new regional director. Difficult scheduling it for June. We're trying for a meeting in July. I think it'll be a pretty full agenda because hopefully we'll also be hearing from our airport director on some thoughts about the possibility of some grant funding that might become available. Can I answer anyone's questions? Let's go to Government Operations Committee. Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Government Operations Committee met on June 1st. We had a presentation from Rod Howe of the History Center in Tompkins County. That's the name of it. The History Center has been in their current location for 22 years, and their lease ends at the end of 2018. So they're taking this opportunity to imagine where else they might go, how else it might look in the future. And they're also taking that opportunity to think about other organizations that they could co-locate with and what that might look like. So they've got a working name for this group, which would be the Heritage Education Center. And let me read you a list of the organizations that they're currently talking with. These aren't necessarily all going to end up together, but just listen to who they're discussing possibilities with. So this is the History Center, Historic Ithaca, the Ithaca Aviation Heritage Foundation, the Wharton Studio Museum, the Discovery Trail, the Ithaca Festival, the Latino Civic Association of Tompkins County, the Ithaca Asian American Association, the Dorothy Cotton Institute, the Hangar Theater Office, and Cornell University, Ithaca College, TC3, and the Convention and Visitors Bureau are all in discussions. So personally, I'm really inspired by the possibility that to bring some or all of these organizations together in one place, I think it would really have quite a multiplying effect, bringing in all their supporters and all the constituencies that are supporters of those groups. They're looking at, they're trying to locate on the commons. And it would be a facility that would be aimed at both tourists and residents. And it would provide program space and display space and office space. We also heard from Jonathan Wood, our attorney, who's also the attorney for MEGA, the Municipal Electric and Gas Alliance. He just gave us a little update on what's going on with that organization. MEGA was founded or started here in Tompkins County in the late 1990s, and it's spread far and wide since then. It has a bunch of municipal governments from all over New York State in it. And the idea is that the more people you bring in together, the better you can bargain for cheaper energy prices and also offer more choices to your members, including greener options. The next thing that we'll be looking at is community choice aggregation. Is that what it's called? Yeah. Community choice aggregation, which we've heard about here before, and you're going to be hearing a lot more about soon. And what this would basically do is provide that same service that we're currently doing to municipal governments to residents, to provide those same economic benefits and choices. So stay tuned for that. Our next meeting is July 6th, and that's my report.
Questions? Thank you, Dan. We'll go to Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Martha Robertson is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. We met on not just yesterday, but we met May 18th as well. And it was a pretty packed agenda with the report from Charlie Troutman and Martha Armstrong on the Energy and Economic Development Task Force. That was May 18th. Comments were due from the public May 27th. They are now trying to – there was also a public meeting that night, and they're going to be pulling that together, pulling comments together, and we'll bring – the task force will meet one or two more times, and then the I believe Charlie will be presenting it to this body on June 21st in this – basically what we expect will be the final form. The planning staff, Ed gave us an update, Megan gave us an update on the housing needs assessment. Ed talked about the, and Katie talked about the greenhouse gas emissions inventory that they're starting on right now. And Ed gave us an update on the energy focus area and IDA incentives for green energy. Those issues, I won't go through the content of all those, but it was a pretty interesting discussions. The and then we met yesterday for the business that we've already discussed today, tonight, and I have Resolution E, I believe, is the one that was pulled. Scheduling a public hearing for the continuation and modification to Agricultural District Number 2, located on the west side of Cuga Lake.
Pulled that.
I pulled it, but I pulled it as part of a group of resolutions, all of which have public hearings scheduled at the same time. I shouldn't have pulled that one because that's the first one. 5:30. I'm sorry, I pulled it, Martha.
Oh, okay. I did get a second. I forgot to ask. Is there a second for this, Anna? Can we proceed to a vote?
Yes, please.
All those in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Okay, and then so planning meets next on. Was next Wednesday already, Kathy? June 15th. But we're going to look at the agenda and see if maybe we can give ourselves a break and not have a meeting next week. So, but I'll look at that. But in case, I mean, it's on the agenda. It's on the calendar for next Wednesday.
Yes.
All right. That's my report.
Thank you. So we go to the Charter Review Committee. Dooley Kiefer is the chair.
Yes, Charter Review is having an extra meeting. It is this next Monday, the 13th. It's at 10 a.m. We will be focusing on the possibility of having the sheriff become a professional position, that part of the charter. That's it.
Questions for Dooley? Let's move on to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
Good evening. I had two resolutions under the consent agenda. They were both pulled off, and I think I know why, but I don't know why. But I'm just guessing. Well, you want me to guess?
You ready to move them?
Yeah, I'll move F.
Why don't you move F, please?
It's a public hearing, TC3 operating budget 2016-2017.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn Morey.
Yes, I pulled that intentionally because its public hearing is also scheduled for 5:30, the same time as the planning committee's resolution. And so is Resolution G. They all are scheduled to start at 5:30. And although I gather it is common practice in courts of law to call people there at the same time, and you never know when you're going to get taken, for legislative purposes, it seems to me that we could do better than that, and that each public hearing on the same day should be scheduled to start at a different time. My suggestion is to have them 1 minute apart. At least time to open the public hearing, and if nobody's there, you go on to the next one. But at least people will understand the order that they will be taken in instead of just seeing them in the Ithaca Journal all scheduled at 5:30 and not knowing who's going to go first. So that's my suggested amendment to this resolution to have the public hearing at 5:31.
Is that friendly?
Yeah. What was the other one you pulled off, the first one you pulled off?
Next one, Jim.
And not in this committee, but
the last one was was the planning committee, but that is at 5:30, and I don't want to change that.
Oh, you don't? What if we want to be at 5:30 and they are at 5:33?
Well, then we shouldn't have voted on that one.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I would rather say 5:32 and 5:34.
Wait a minute. We have a suggested amendment to make it 5:32
on the TC3 college operating budget.
That's fine if that's your preference.
All right. Is it friendly to the seconder? Friendly to Glenn. So now we have this, that the public hearing was going to be at 5:32. If I could speak, it just seems strange to me. I think we've always scheduled multiple public hearings at the same time. Even if you schedule them a couple of minutes apart, I understand Dooley's comment about people understanding the order. However, there's no way we're going to have the second hearing two minutes after the first one begins, even if we tried.
Is there a penalty for that?
Unless nobody speaks.
If nobody speaks.
Even if nobody speaks by the time you start talking about the next one. Anyway, it's been moved and seconded. The amendment's been accepted as friendly on the resolution to schedule a public hearing. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous.
The next resolution, the other one, G, authorizing public hearing on proposed local law number of 2016, creating new chapter 133 of the county code to be entitled residency. And I would move that with the 534 number.
Okay. I guess I got to ask for a second. Seconded with that change by Dave. Discussion on this one. Jim, could you talk about this a bit,
Absolutely.
I think I heard some folks asking questions about why the residency would be statewide.
Well, my knowledge of this is meager, but let me just say that there's been some difficulty in the district attorney's office, I believe, in hiring ADAs. We lost one recently. We had someone apply for a job, and they were outside the county. And correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, but it's, you know, we're limiting the people who can work for us because you have to be a Tompkins County resident. And apparently there have been people who wanted to do this job who lived outside the county, and they were more than competent to be an ADA. So,
Joe?
And the same thing applies to correction officers. It's relatively difficult to recruit correction officers from this area. These two titles are commonly exempted from public officers law in New York State. Seem to be the two most common, probably because other counties have had experiences similar to ours. So we're basically picking up what many other counties in New York State have done by exempting them from residency. We had a long conversation about whether you should restrict residency to the adjacent counties. And then should you stop there, or if you made it statewide, do you really think people are going to come in from two or three counties away to come work here? So the practical effect is you're going to be drawing from an area relatively close to this county. So instead of making it adjacent counties, and we made it statewide.
Anna?
Just curious, is consistently what you found precedent in other counties that they did say state, or there's kind of a mix between
contiguous? It's a mixed bag. We found both. We found several with adjacent counties. You found some, I'm not sure it's the same, if it's an even mix, some that made it statewide.
Because that was a discussion that I think has been going around the group, from the idea, the logic, at least from what I was feeling and thinking, is that for those two positions in particular, the more they're familiar with our culture, community, people, personal connections, I think it might help in both those cases, and so it seemed prudent to restrict it to the contiguous counties. But I know that there's a pro and con in that, because there's cities like Syracuse and Binghamton then that we wouldn't be able to pull from. So
yeah, and I think the DA's office has pulled from Broome County. In fact, they may even have somebody on payroll who's a Broome County person. So there you're two counties away. It's not adjacent. You're two counties away. Should you exclude those people from Broome County in that office? So again, we chose to go statewide.
Carol Trott.
I understand the rationale about the contiguous counties, but did you look at setting a mileage, you know, within 100 miles? It doesn't seem to me to be workable to have somebody trying to commute here from Stony Brook or what's that town at the very northeastern corner of the state. That doesn't seem to be workable, and I'd hate to have somebody accept a job and then say, well, there's what your requirements said, so I'm asking to work from home. You know, in Lake Placid, I don't know.
Let me make one comment, or maybe two comments. A corrections officer can't work from home. They have to be on site, and an ADA would not do well working from home because they have to be in the courtroom if they're doing things. So, and Jonathan, you put this law together, I think, and you might have a few more better words on it than me.
Well, I will say, you know, and Joe's referring to the other laws, they all are either state in every county in the state or in a contiguous county. There's none which do it by mileage or anything like that. So that's sort of the custom in these laws.
Well, we could be ground setting.
Martha?
Can you remind me what other titles are required to live in Tompkins County?
Yeah, public officers are required to live. This group is considered, they are considered public officers under state law. That's why we're making this change. So public officers would be all of our department heads are public officers.
With a few notable exceptions in the law, like, for example, a head of probation department does not have to live, but otherwise public officers with a few notable exceptions.
Probation doesn't?
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, there are just some exceptions spattered throughout the law, but basically the public officers law says public officers must live in the county. You can make these exceptions. Of course, there's always the issue of just who is a public officer, and then there are some exceptions scattered throughout the law, probation department.
And you're saying what you've just described is state law?
Yes.
And we get to pass a local law that supersedes that.
Yes, in many.
In certain cases. So, mostly it's department heads, but these two titles aren't department heads.
No. Yeah, Joe was saying that mostly the officers are department heads, but all police officers and people in jail and the work in the jail, the corrections officers and DAs are officers.
Okay. Do we have, are the road patrol, the sheriff's deputies required to live in the county right now? We haven't exempted them.
Right. That's correct.
Okay. And I remember asking Anita Fitzpatrick some time ago, like, how many of our employees lived outside the county, and it was like, I seem to remember more than half.
Could well be. Yeah. Okay. Could well be. We can do a run if you'd like. And I want to check on the road patrol officers, too, about residency for them.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember because they may have changed the state law on that. We didn't exempt them. Or at one point they had to live in the county. I think they don't, but I can't remember whether we changed that a long time ago or whether the state law changed the law.
Now you're talking about deputies?
Yeah, the road patrol.
Okay.
Rich, then Dooley.
I support the proposal. It seems like that drive time will self-regulate anybody from Long Island trying to work in Ithaca. And I'd also just note to Anna's concern, which is legitimate, that people should have knowledge of the community if they, you know, it's an asset, that that would be something that could be considered in the hiring process. So.
Dooley?
If we were to change it to contiguous counties and discovered that there's already someone on staff who doesn't, who not only doesn't live in the county but doesn't live in a contiguous county, do we have the authority to make an exception to our local law on a case-by-case basis?
No.
That's what I was afraid of. So are we? We definitely have someone who is not living in Tompkins County or in a contiguous county.
I think we do. I can double check. This is only for the public hearing, I believe, right? This resolution.
Yeah.
So between now and next time, I can confirm that. I believe so, but I will confirm that.
Well, it would be nice to take to public hearing something that we all supported, and I guess I'm not. It's not clear that I support this. I'll set a public hearing on it, but
let me ask. I'll get you, Carol. But let me ask: is there anyone who wants to make an amendment to this from statewide to contiguous county, for example? All right, Carol. Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
I would move that to make contiguous counties.
All right. So you're making a motion to change the language to contiguous county. Is there a second?
Wait.
Is there a second for that?
We're voting on a public hearing here. We're not voting on the local
law. You're right.
You're right.
We ran into this before. we would have to recommit it. I'm sorry, Dooley. I shouldn't have asked
That's fine.
That.
I'm happy not to make that motion.
All right. So, Carol.
So I don't know if I'm ready to send this to public hearing. Do I understand correctly that there are people who are employed by us now who would have to move if we did this? That the committee hasn't considered yet that issue? Jonathan, is that what I understand? Is that correct? People would have to move, who already work for us?
I'm not sure. The issue first came up with when there was the vacancy in the DA's office, and the person did not work for us at the time. So I don't know of any corrections officers who are not living in the county at the moment, but I don't know that.
So I accepted a job once somewhere else, one of the rare times I actually tried in my adult life to leave Ithaca or Danby. I lived in Danby for a while, but to leave Tompkins County. And I asked the question, do I need to, you know, is there a residency requirement? And I was told no. And it was very difficult to find a place to live that I could afford. And I had a young child, and to find childcare that just didn't exist in that community. And I finally put deposits and had that all accepted and decided and called them to say, I'm now set. At what time do I show up tomorrow? And they said, oh, we've passed a residency requirement and people aren't grandfathered, you know, or you, people who were
grandparented.
Here would be grandparented, yes. So I think this isn't quite, unless there's a real time pressure on this, I'd really prefer to see the committee take this back and consider at least that issue about whether you want to write into the law that it be grandfathered, and preferably the issue of, you know, is there something that's in between statewide and contiguous counties to bring to us based on the discussion we've had.
So that would take a motion to recommit to committee, to return it to committee.
So can I move that? I'd like to move that.
Is there a second on a motion to return this to committee? Seconded by Dooley. Discussion on the motion to recommit this to the Budget and Capital and Personnel Committee. All right. Anna, then Martha, then Carol.
I'm just thinking, as it's written, given that it says state, that it addresses the issue, Carol, that you're bringing up, because they could live anywhere in the state, and I appreciate
what Rich and a few others have said, that because they would physically have to work here, it's their judgment call how much they want to drive to get to work. So it is, in a way, sort of takes care of that issue on both points by saying that it's state, now that we're sort of thinking through it and talking through it together. So I'm just thinking that it probably addresses that first point because it does say state.
On the motion to recommit, remember we're talking about.
Yep.
Martha.
So do you know whether there's a pending vacancy right now where this would be an issue? And a delay would be a problem.
There was when we started the process. I can't say for sure today.
I don't know either.
Carol?
I don't know. But again, I...
Go ahead. Finish, Joe.
Since this is only setting the public hearing, we can answer all these questions and bring them to you when you're looking at the substantive resolution in a couple of weeks. We can do that.
Okay, and if we want to change it, we just have another public hearing.
So I meant to also add a look at the statistics, particularly given the issue about whether people who already work for us would have to pick up and move. I'd like to know how many people. I just really think it behooves us to know the answer to that before we send this to hearing. If it were just a matter of the contiguous counties, we could do that on the floor. But I just think it's getting too complicated to take up these three different issues potentially on the floor.
All right. On the motion to recommit Resolution G to the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, all those in favor of recommittal, please raise your hand. One. Those opposed? I'm sorry? If you're in favor of sending it back to committee and not voting on it tonight, raise your hand. Those opposed? Everyone else? So that's 12 to 1. So that failed. So we're back to the resolution. We're ready to vote. This is authorizing the public hearing to be set at 5:30. Dooley, anything else?
I just wanted to say to my colleague Rich John that we should not be encouraging commuting long distances for greenhouse gas emission purposes.
I would only contemplate they do that with an electric vehicle.
Because we pay such good salaries.
All right, come on, we're getting a little...
Yes.
Or a bicycle.
All those in favor of the resolution with the amendment setting the public hearing, please raise your hand. Those opposed. We have two opposed.
Dr. Carr.
Okay. I'm sorry, are you done?
No, I just want to say that this has been wonderful. And our next meeting is June 27th, and we have a short meeting before the next ledge meeting also, and we'll let you know what that is about. So if there are no other questions, thank you very much.
Jim, if you would hang loose in case you need a special meeting for TC3.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Mike.
I appreciate that. Let's go. The old library committee has not met. Let's go to individual member filed resolution. Jim Dennis has resolution M.
And shall we go?
Yeah.
Resolution M, authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law X of 2016, a local law overriding the tax levy limit for 2017, and I would move that.
Is there a second?
Again, this is a public hearing.
Seconded by Anna. Discussion. Martha.
What time is the hearing?
5:36.
Okay. I'll set my watch.
That small amendment. Are we ready to vote?
I support this.
All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? Two opposed.
Three.
I'm sorry, I missed
the
third one.
I think there were three.
Who was the third one?
Peter, David.
Who was the third?
All right, who are the no's? Please raise your hand. The no's.
David.
Peter, Glenn, Dave. Peter, Glenn, and Dave I've got.
Glenn, Dave, and Peter.
That's three. Thank you. That passes. So we're setting the public hearing.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to...
That's it for me. Thank you.
Minutes of May 17th. Someone want to move those? Rich, seconded by Martha. Discussion? All those in favor of the minutes?
No, you're only looking at Dooley for that one? I'm discussing my orange sleeve.
Watch.
I just wanted to know from Kathy on pages, packet pages 46 and 7 on the GO resolution on ethics. Are those underlines, are those changes, the changes we made during on the floor? Is that what it?
Well, there were amendments that were offered.
Offered on the
part
floor.
Of the motion.
That's just showing that. Okay, thanks.
Anything else? Ready to vote on the minutes? Those in favor? Those opposed? We have one opposed. Any unfinished business?
I would like to say why, give some examples of why I'm opposed quickly, if I may. There should have been mentioned on page 3 of the Health and Human Services Special Committee meeting on the drug plan. That was not an action, but it's the kind of thing that should be in our minutes. That's an example.
Thank you. I'll just say one thing. Dooley told us tonight about a presentation on fireworks. I just want to remember, with July 4th coming up, we're one of the few counties in the region that has not passed the ground-based fireworks legislation. That means even though you can buy it in Cortland or Cayuga or Tioga County, for example, buy those fireworks, you may not possess or use them in Tompkins County. The difficulty, of course, is that people won't understand that, that they will assume that if they see them for sale at Walmart in Cortland, that they will be able to shoot them off on 4th of July. So I would just bring that to your attention, folks.
And don't buy them anyway.
Dan?
Just smiling.
Anything
Mike, are you
going to
bring that back?
It could be brought back. They would take an action.
Perhaps our new Rangers can patrol that.
Is there a motion to adjourn? Motion by Rich, seconded by Peter. All those in favor? Thank you all. A little disjointed, but a good meeting.